When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
That's me! Hey, I'm in this episode right now, right here.
What a way to do it, man. Great to have you today. Great to have you. Jay, tell them where they can find you.
Where they can find me?
every podcast we've ever been on, that's always like the really like the part at the end where they're like, and guys, tell them where they can find you.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you can, and I always feel so weird about this because it's like, you can follow me over at @SEB_Ben on Instagram. Right. Also the same on Twitter.
Because that's the big thing, the collaborative part is that you can direct the people listening to that podcast to you in some way. And it's like, oh, I'm almost so caught off guard. I'm like, YouTube, should I say the YouTube channel, or is this more of like an Instagram, Twitter sort of thing?
Right. Yeah. It's like, you have no idea like, what
you're
trying to
find me, more me personally is like Twitter and Instagram. But like, if you want it, like the real thing, if you want to like, see me for what I'm known for and why I'm on this podcast is the YouTube. So, what was the question?
I don't know.
What's the internet?
My MySpace.
You can see me. I deleted my MySpace.
I also deleted my MySpace.
Yeah.
That was my first social media platform, though.
You know, I would say it is mine as well. Although I want to say, would like AOL Instant Messenger have counted as a social media platform?
You know what? Okay. I think it kind of does. I think it kind of does. And I loved AOL Instant Messenger.
Me too. See, the part of it to me that feels really social media-y was not necessarily that you could chat with people, because that's not necessarily social media. But the part that I think became the social media aspect of it was the away messages.
That's exactly what it was.
It was like, that was like the earliest version of posting your status.
Like you could like interject a bit of your personality into it and be like creative. Like I remember one of my favorite things to do was you could use like %N, and then whoever was looking at your away message, it would read their away message. So like I would put on the phone with %N.
Oh.
And then if you were to look at it, it would say on the phone with Silly Boy 600.
That's funny.
And so then anybody who like came and checked my away message, they would be like, what? No, you're not.
That's hilarious. That's a very clever one. Also, thank you for outing my screen name.
Yeah, Silly Boy 600. Love it.
No, man. It was alliterative. I don't know. I don't know where the 600 came from.
You haven't really stuck to that.
No.
Mine was XC Runner. It was XCRUNNR 36.
Right.
Which 36 to this day is still my favorite number.
Yes. So you sort of stuck to that.
Right.
Not so much the cross-country running.
I'm not still a cross-country runner after all these years. It is interesting, though, how... And this happened to me all the time with people who had screen names where I didn't get the reference that they were making. Or, like, so I never pieced together how they were being clever with it.
Oh, right.
And this happened to me after, like, the longest period of time, because I had, like, capital XC, which is, like, cross country, which is not something that everybody immediately gets.
Right.
So a lot of people were like, yeah, what does your screen name mean? It's like X-Crunner. And
X-Crunner.
and like, I think they thought it was like a gaming reference or something like that. Like that was some type of, you know, like you're the person who mans the machine gun on the Warthog in Halo or something.
Right.
The X-Crunner.
Right. Sure. That's the word for that, right?
Exactly. It is now.
Yeah. It's like poof.
Dibs on X-Crunner. But that, it was really funny to me, I think, whenever I would have a conversation with someone in real life, and they would be like, yeah, that like, what does that mean? Because your wife, Beth's screen name was like Boozy.
Oh, yeah.
Which, yeah. Like, you know, for Beth, who was a pretty like responsible high school student.
Amongst the most responsible you could be in high school.
Well, she was a valedictorian, was she not?
I don't know. I don't know how. I couldn't tell you who our valedictorian was. I don't think she was, because in order to have that status, you had to be taking like gov school classes and stuff. I think like weight your grade point average above a 4.0, stuff like that. So she wasn't in there. I think she probably did get straight A's and stuff.
Okay. Anyway, yeah. The point is, Boozy, as like I would think of that now, would be maybe how you would describe a heavy-handed mimosa.
Right.
As it's, Boozy.
Well, this is Boozy.
Yeah, it's like this is mostly champagne with like a splash of OJ.
It turns out that Boozy does tend to conjure up images of heavy alcohol consumption.
Yes.
But Boozy was instead a reference from band class, and her, like, the person she shared a stand with, I think they had a sheet of music and one of the composers on its name was Boozy or something.
Oh my gosh.
And so
I've never heard this origin story.
Oh, that is where it came from. So it was just like this band nickname, and it became her screen name. That I think even when she made it, I would doubt she had an inkling that it referenced alcohol in such a way until after the fact.
Right.
Yeah.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
The other friend we had like this, we've talked about him so many times, is John Jennings, and his screen name was like Brionky.
Yeah, completely nonsense.
But it was like lowercase b, uppercase r, like so on. It alternated, but it was basically just run spaced into bike.
Yeah.
So his screen name was just bike run.
Yeah.
But the way it looked was like
Brioknie or whatever.
Brioknie, yeah. And that's another one where it was kind of like once the light bulb went off, it was like, oh, that was clever. I see what you did there.
Yeah. Everyone had felt such a personal thing to choose your screen name, because it had to be like relevant to you, but it had to be cool to anyone who saw it. But yeah, I don't know. And I felt like it was not uncommon for people to just up and switch screen names all the time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was always almost like kind of a way to purge your like friend list a little bit,
mm-hmm.
because I think for me that would frequently happen because I had so many friends.
Your buddy list, I believe,
buddy list. Yeah, thank you for getting the terminology right. Do you remember whenever somebody signed on, it would make like a door opening and a door closing noise?
But eventually they had updates where you could change the sounds and stuff. These
were
the innovations.
Things that would just drive people crazy.
Oh, there was so much like social layering to Instant Messenger, where I think, like you might have multiple screen names, but so you'd like adopt a new one, but then you might not tell everyone about it.
Right.
So maybe you'd still log on to the old one sometimes, but then it was like you could see but other people could see it if they had both of them.
Right.
Like what was going on.
Right.
Or like the away message. I feel like that was a great way to like only talk to the people you wanted to talk to.
Oh, because you could still talk with an away message.
You could talk with an away message.
So you would be like, I'm away. Psych.
Yeah. So then if people were messaging you and you didn't want to talk to them, the away message would just be like, no, I'm not here. Meanwhile, you're just talking to everyone else.
Oh, but there were so many nuances even about that, where like you could eventually go idle, which would mean that like you hadn't like touched your computer at all. And so like if you were like, I remember I was dating this one girl and she had hers set so that like after 20 minutes of like no use on the computer, she would go idle.
Mm.
And so if she put up like her away message and then didn't go idle after that period of time, you're like, wait a second,
wait a minute.
Like, are you still on right now?
Maybe your mom's using the computer or something.
Maybe, but it didn't feel like it.
It never does. With Instant Messenger, I always found like if you're assuming the worst, it seemed like so often it was the case.
It was oh my gosh. Alice and I were talking about this exact thing about high school-based relationships, is that whenever somebody was suspicious of something happening, we felt like one of two things was always happening. Something suspicious was happening, or the person who is suspicious was doing something suspicious and reflecting their own behavior onto the other person.
Isn't that always how it is?
That is always how it is.
People, the guilty conscience.
Guilty conscience, yes. Yeah, so you start looking for it.
Yeah. Oh, this was another, I feel like this was a big thing for high school relationships, is when you logged on, if you saw your significant other was already online, would you immediately message them, or would you be like, I'll see if they noticed I got, you know, would you wait?
If I was in a relationship, you know, yeah. Then I would message them right away.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was somebody who I was like talking to
I see.
Yeah, like I'm still trying to like gauge like what their interest is in me versus mine and them. It would be the type of thing where I would log on and be like, I'm gonna play it cool.
Yeah, that's like a barometer for how interested the other person is whether, because if you message them first, maybe they're just talking to you out of politeness.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But that also became the thing too, is that it's like there was this almost like neighborly phenomenon that would happen, is there would be like people who I like would have used to have talked to. I don't know if that's the proper grammar at all. But then like maybe like we weren't really having like steady conversations, but it was still like obligatory to log on and be like, hey.
Oh, right.
You know, and like,
hey,
like,
so not much. You? Not much.
Not much. NM?
Yeah,
you?
NM.
Question mark? And so it was like, I feel like I would usually log on, and the way that my screen was shaped, I could fit 9 chat windows and it would take up the whole screen.
It's a lot of chat
and
windows.
It was sort of like the top left was always like chat prime, like
right.
That was where I was expected to have like the most conversation. And then like bottom right, it was like that was the hey sup NM you NM,
right?
And that was the end of that.
That was the end of that
exchange.
Conversation. I just checked in.
It's like you know, hey, I acknowledged that you were out here, just in the same way that like if you're walking your trash can out to the road and your neighbor's also walking their trash can out to the road, you wave at them.
Yeah.
It's like, hey.
It was such a weird world of everyone having such visibility to your like to what your actions were in such real time, but in such a very limited way. And yet everyone, I feel like you'd come home from school and it'd be like, I'm going to go get it. Like, that was it. Like, that was the activity.
Oh, like, I'm going to go get on AIM.
I'm going to go talk to people or whatever. And I feel like everyone could read it, all the subtleties, so well.
Oh, because you know? it's like any social game. It's like there becomes these defined phenomenons where, like, it means this, that.
Yes, exactly.
And, oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm remembering all of the different, the AIM nuances.
Okay, so one of them, the other thing, the other way you could personalize is you had a description. So
oh,
like, you
yes.
could like you could like click
your
someone's
profile.
Your profile. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, like you could click it and it was like this space. And I remember for like when I was in middle school, people would always use this and they would literally just list the names of all the people they were friends with. So it would be like,
so mean.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it was like a really like strange thing where it would just be like, shout out to my friends, and it would be like Ben and Ryan and Casey and you know whatever, and it would just go down the list of like everyone and then it'd be the type of thing where if like somebody like was on and they checked your info and they were like, hey, I'm not on there, they'd be like, hey, how come I'm not part of your list? You'd be like, hold on, let me put you in there. And then like, you know, I would usually like make some type of like funny remark
right
and like next to their name all of a sudden.
Gosh, how to choose what to put in your profile.
Oh, so difficult.
So difficult.
But so this was the thing, is that like, again, one of the girls that I dated, her big thing was that she would always have in the profile the guy that she was talking to, like some type of witty exchange that they had. So it would be like a copy paste of like, you know, like a dad joke that someone had told or whatever, or where someone, I don't know, just something funny that had happened in their goings back and forths. And I remember that was a big one where I could always tell if one girl in particular had started talking to a new guy, because she would always put that new guy, like where she had some type of fun exchange with them in her profile. Then it was like, oh, okay, time to start worrying about,
I see what's happening,
about this dude.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who's Hot Dog Man 73, you know?
Hot Dog Man 73? I hated that guy.
Sorry if that was your screen name. I just pulled it out of thin air.
No, I totally fit. Totally fit. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm now applying it to all the people in high school who I despised.
Probably Edward.
Edward. It's always Edward.
The enemy of the pop.
At the end of the day, it is the pop versus Edward. Unless you're a loyal colonel out there and your name is Edward, in which case, welcome.
Yeah, welcome, wink. Hey, speaking of the pop, we sort of skipped right over the corny joke. We got right into AIM, right into AOL Instant Messenger. I want to hear other people's stories about Instant Messenger, though. So.
I know. We need to know, yeah. Because I feel like this could be one of those things that shows our age a little bit, because realistically...
It's completely gone now.
It is. Yeah. Well, and it made sense because and we were talking about like away messages, but like once everybody had texting and phones, you were just always online.
I can't even imagine the terror of that.
There's never a moment where it's acceptable to do not be available to be communicated with.
Because at least on Instant Messenger, it was like, you had to log in. You had to have, you could log in, and if you logged out, you were not available.
Right.
Right now, you have a cell phone, you're available.
You're available.
I text you, you don't text back. What's the deal?
What's the deal?
What's the deal?
Yeah.
I'm so glad I'm married.
I know. It made everything so much easier.
Man, what a load off.
Okay, corny joke. What concert cost just 45 cents?
I feel like this is a 50 cent joke.
It could be. It could be.
I don't know.
50 cent featuring Nickelback.
Oh! That is, wow, a concert that would never happen.
No, it's not. Hey, but did you hear the rumor about Butter?
No, what was
Well,
the rumor?
I'm not going to spread it.
That's like interrupting Cal. The best knock-knock joke.
Jade, you know I don't trust stairs.
You're just loaded today.
Loaded.
Hold on. Why don't you trust stairs? Because they're always looking at you? I don't know.
They're always up to something.
Oh, I was going with like staring.
Oh, I see. Nice. Okay.
They're always up to something. They're also always down to earth, though, aren't they?
Oh, hey. How about that? That was well done.
Thank you.
Funny story. So I'm currently in the process of attempting to renovate portions of my home.
Oh, boy. That sounds tricky. How's your concrete pad going?
Concrete pad is great.
Yeah.
Still completely intact so far.
Have you lifted all of the weights on it?
I have.
Wow.
I have now deadlifted 265 pounds on it. Whoa. Which means that it was able to accommodate a 265 pound sledgehammer hitting it effectively.
Well, I mean, I guess.
So, sort of.
Yeah. What? Well, you're failing to calculate the swing of the hammer.
Maybe.
There, right?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Well, what happens if I were to drop it from like waist height?
What, the hammer?
No, the barbell at 265 pounds.
Mm. I feel like at that point you're just having gravity plus the weight as opposed to the sledgehammer.
Which is accelerated.
In which case you'd have the accelerator, but the sledgehammer wouldn't weigh 265 pounds, so I don't know.
Except I feel like the way the sledgehammer works in large part is that it's not like sledgehammers are purposely heavy, so all you're really doing is directing its weight.
Yeah.
More than you are applying your additional force to its weight.
But you're applying some, like, the momentum, like, the acceleration has to affect, like, that must account for, like, the impact must be a greater amount of weight. It's like the wind chill. You know, it's like the
wind chill.
Right.
You're right.
It's like you're being hit with a 20-pound hammer. Feels like 2,000. Right.
That is exactly right.
That's exactly right.
That's exactly right. Okay. I'm totally fine with that.
Okay.
Concrete pad is doing well though, so thank you for asking. I do appreciate it. People should ask that more often in general. It's like, how's your concrete pad doing?
I don't know how many people have the concrete pads though. You know?
Everyone.
Everyone?
Everyone.
Okay.
This has been a tangent off of my stair question though, but I have the set of stairs that is inside of like one quote unquote, it's called a bedroom because it technically has a closet and a window. It is not a bedroom. It is like, could be a laundry room at best if my laundry room wasn't in my basement.
Maybe you should change that.
Maybe.
How much easier would your life be if your laundry room was next to your
So
bedroom?
Much easier.
Yeah.
So if I could have my laundry room be, if I would put the laundry room in my bedroom and I wouldn't even have like a hamper. I would just put my clothes directly into it at all times. And then it's like, okay, that's about full. Start.
Here we go.
I have to tell you that as an adult human, and this is true for both Allie and I, we are terrible at laundry, not in the act of doing it, but in the act of doing it to any kind of washing instructions. Hard stop.
Oh,
like
you just like put in whatever clothes at normal setting, cold water plus soap.
Correct.
There it is.
That's yep. it. That's it.
That's
yeah.
it.
And I'm sure that my clothes are destroyed because of it, or pilled, you know, because of it.
Possibly.
But you know what? That's just the way it is.
I've been having to deal with the... I typically, that's about as far as I can go either. I'm always so afraid to put the hot water on, and that some rogue piece of red clothing in an otherwise white batch will stain everything pink.
I have never had that happen before.
Yeah, me neither. Well, because you do cold water every time.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But I'm always afraid, like, even if I have all whites, I'm like, oh, there's like a red pattern on that shirt, though. Like, there's just like one red square. I don't know. Maybe just put cold.
Just put cold.
The gold.
Don't chance it.
But the other thing I'm having to contend with right now is the twins produce so much laundry.
Do
so
they?
So much
They're
laundry.
They're so itty bitty, though.
Oh my gosh, but they spit up so much.
Oh,
so,
I see.
And not only are they spitting up on their onesies, but it'll be like the bibs, and it'll be like the spit cloth, and it'll be like the sleep sacks, if you will. And man, there's just a lot. And there's two of them, so, you know, there's many things. You cannot believe how wet everything gets. It is absolutely disgusting. Sorry, sons.
It's
you're listening to this in the fullness of time, but...
Oh, I never thought about that. Like, at some point in time, our kids are going to be able to really go back and have a significant amount of documentation...
Oh, yeah.
...of our lives.
Yeah, well, Nicholas, Nathan, you guys spit up all the time, and you didn't let me sleep, and I'm tired.
Called out.
To whatever be fair, you're listening.
To be fair, it seemed like Lukester also had those same things. He just wasn't double.
Well, yes, he also spit up quite a bit.
Okay.
Spit. And I don't know that either of them wouldn't be better at sleeping. I feel like they rile each other up.
Yeah, that's how twins work, though, right?
Or it's like, maybe Luke was equally as bad, but because there's a double opportunity for someone to wake up, it's like you feel like it doesn't matter which one. It's not, you know, maybe if it was just Nate, he would sleep a bunch and then there'd be nights where he woke up, and maybe that's how Luke was, but it seems like whatever night one of them chooses to sleep well, the other one is like,
No
I'm afraid
way.
Not.
No
I'm
way.
Afraid not.
I can't even tell you, and I'm sorry to say this, how much I'm hoping that one of your children ends up being a prankster.
Oh,
like,
gosh.
Like totally just like the goofball that's like, oh, it's on.
Oh, it's on. I feel like if it's the twins, if it's one, it's both.
If right? it's one, it's both.
If it's one, it's both.
I mean, that would be so delightful because you and Beth are outstandingly responsible people. I actually think it's very funny the way that our brotherhood shook out in terms of the people that we married, because you and Beth are both oldest in their family. You guys are both like the beacons of oldest children. You're both very responsible, very put together. You guys did all of the first, got married first, had the first kids.
Yeah.
Like all the things.
Right.
And then Allie and I are both middle children, and I feel like we are both exactly the same, where like we're like the gotta prove ourselves,
right,
you know, member of the family, probably a little more willing to like take a risk or do something that's like a smidgen more out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tyler, our youngest brother, and his wife Emily is also a youngest in her family, which I think is I think this is so remarkable.
It is weird.
Like, there's no two ways about it. Birth order is a thing.
Oh, it is a thing, and it affects you, and it's just the way things are.
Yeah, and so I do feel like they're like in the same way they embody the like youngest child portion of the equation as well. Where was I going with this though? Oh, so okay, yeah. So because you and Beth are both such responsible people, that I feel like it's just going to be so funny if you guys have like the class clown as one of your children, because Luke already to me seems like golden child straight up. Like I'm like this kid is going to be like, he's going to go to the best school out of all the grandchildren. He's got like, you know, he's like in line to be, you know, like rays of sunshine and, you know, all the good things.
Well, he's pretty awesome. There's no doubt.
He's pretty awesome. So yeah, no, this is just what I'm secretly pulling for. I might even help it happen.
Oh, might you?
This is like my biggest reason to just be the cool uncle for the rest of my life,
mm-hmm.
is because of the role that I would then get to play in everyone else's lives.
Just having your own kids doesn't mean you can't be an uncle to your other nephews and nieces.
No, but not a full-time uncle.
Oh, full-time uncle.
Professional uncle. It's like
professional
that's,
uncle.
It's like that's like what I do is I uncle for a living.
I uncle.
Yeah, I uncle hard.
Well, I still hope that Luke and Nick and Nate have a cousin from their Uncle Ben, but we shall see.
We shall see. Moving on from that, while still being in the vein of family, one thing that I think is that I have to talk to you about is I have just discovered over this past weekend that our mom is like,
hey, mom,
is a huge fan of the pop.
Who knew?
This is, okay, and I feel like this sounds like one of those things where it's like, of course your mom listens to your work. Like, totally fair. I understand that thought. But we have created, I think, so much media over the years that for mom and dad to have kept with it would be, like, very bold.
Well, I think it maybe comes as a little bit more surprising because the main channel stuff, like Super Carlin Brothers, like, it is difficult for them to consume because you have to be a fairly engaged fan and already know a lot about... You have to be a big fan of the thing.
Exactly.
To really... like apply to you as well, and they're probably not getting as interested in deep dive Harry Potter lore as our typical viewer, but like the vlog, I think mom typically would watch most of those because
sure.
That's just like about, you know, her grandchildren and stuff,
right?
But so I would not have expected that the pop would have pierced her media bubble.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think I felt the same way. So she's like telling me about it, and she's like blown away at the specific things growing up that we remember, which is so fair. I think about this all the time. Like when I think back to like first grade, you know, I had 180 days of first grade.
Yeah.
But when I think about first grade, I feel like I can think of 3 to 4 days that stood out to me throughout the whole year.
Interesting.
So it's like, I definitely probably couldn't go through and have ultra specific memories about so many different.
Yeah. It's like maybe I would have a lot of memories, but I couldn't like piece them as like separate days. It's just all first grade. Yeah.
Yeah. I do think your memory works in a much more like smooth and carefully organized way than mine does, which I think is haphazard. Like our grandpa Jack, for example, I feel like when he tells a story, he's like, when I was 16, there was this one summer that I was working for, you know, whoever.
Yeah.
And he like remembers that it was when he was 16. I can tell you memories from high school.
Right.
And that is as close as I can possibly get to the year that it was.
I'm so bad at like choosing the age that goes with what year of school.
Oh, right. You know what
I mean? Because normally you're two different ages over the course of a single year of school.
Right.
And it's so hard to it's so much easier to categorize the school year as like a significant portion of time than I think the age of life.
Sure.
You know, it's like easier to be like, oh yeah, freshman year I did this, but I don't know. Like I couldn't tell you how old I was as a freshman. I guess you're like 13, 14, right?
I think.
14, 15?
I think 14, 15.
Yeah.
I think because then you turn 16 sophomore.
Right.
Right.
All I know is like as a senior, you're like 18.
Right.
So I kind of work backwards from there.
Yeah, I think middle school years especially, it's like, what year are you when you're 12?
Right, yes. Sixth grade?
Maybe early seventh grade?
Eighth grade?
Not eighth grade.
No.
Definitely not eighth grade.
No? Okay, not eighth grade. Seventh. Who knows? This is the problem. Anyway,
I know.
Other people are really good at this, but not me.
Right. So the point is, though, is that, like, we've brought up these specific memories from our childhood, and granted, we haven't canvassed the entire...
childhood
like,
yet.
Yeah, the entire bank of memories that we could pull off of from our childhood life, but the things that she thought were most interesting were the things that were remarkable enough to us to remember to talk about on a podcast. Like
so for example, like what? Like the gravel driveway?
The gravel driveway was one. Yeah. Which, okay, like that's not that specific of a memory because we did live there for like 12 years or something.
Yeah.
So that was a long time to be exposed to that. But I think we told a story about going to Walmart and getting to pick out blankets where I picked out a purple blanket and you picked out a green blanket.
Bright green.
Yeah. Which we then had for like probably the next like 15 years of our life.
I think I brought it to college. I don't know.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I may have brought mine. I think mine was in my dorm room.
Is it still on your bed?
What? No. I framed it.
It's on the wall.
It was disintegrating. So I think she thought that was particularly funny, though, because you have to imagine that from her perspective, the day that we bought these random, like, you know, $8 bin blankets at Walmart was, to her, probably not a particularly remarkable day.
Right.
Like, why would that go on to be like a long-term memory into, you know, foreverness?
Oh, I have a theory. It's because as a child, I would assume so few things are really yours. Like, especially when you have brothers or siblings, like all of your toys, they might have been given to you, but are effectively everyone's.
Sure.
Right? There's a big shared thing. But your bed, that little space, is definitively your space. Like in the whole house, this is definitely your space. Other people don't sleep here. And what is on your bed and part of your bed is a daily constant that you own as a child, and it's probably standalone in that way about most things in the house.
Interesting. Like, and maybe this is where, as a child, maybe I put like much more value into like possessions,
mm-hmm.
or even like my own. But then it was also like the type of thing where I feel like as a kid, I would not play with your toys specifically because it was like, no, those aren't mine.
Right.
Like,
okay.
I could mess them up.
Then, not play with them.
And then
if I wanted to, I could mess these up right now. Oh, man.
It wasn't like a threatening thing. It was a responsibility to your possessions type of thing.
Right,
it was
like, if you broke my toy.
Then, I know how upset I would have been if you broke my toy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, well, then I can't do that to someone else. Like,
right.
that would be the worst.
The worst.
But maybe that is where, like, my green-eyed monster-ness as a child came out in such a big way. Like, when you or Tyler got something and I was, like, very envious of it, it was like, man, I want one of those so bad.
You and it's wanted like, the green blanket?
No, I had a purple blanket. I was good. I picked it out. But no, it was the type of thing where it was like, I could be, even though this new toy was introduced to our home where I could have just as ready access to it,
mm-hmm.
it was like I didn't. There was like this invisible barrier that I was not allowed to cross over into in order to like have access to that thing.
I see.
And what's interesting about this is that like clothes in particular, like as we got older, you know, and it wasn't toys, but maybe like for Christmas, mom and dad gave us, you know, like a Ralph Lauren polo shirt or something
sure.
like that. It never like would occur to me that because you got a shirt that like if I so chose, I could go and like grab it from your closet and wear it to school one day.
Oh, we were not clothes sharing people.
But then like Allie talks about growing up with her sisters, it was sort of like they would all wear each other's clothes constantly.
Interesting.
Like that was just sort of like par for the course. It was like they all had their own individual closets and things were definitely, you know, bestowed to them as individuals, but it was not uncommon at all.
Mm.
Even to this day, like it won't be unusual for me to run into Alice's sister Samantha, who was like wearing an outfit that I gave to Alice for like Christmas or something.
Oh,
and I'm
I
like
see.
It's like, whoa, that's weird. Like,
I was gonna say, I'm impressed you could even keep track of all of their who's is what's.
Only because
you gave it to
like
them.
Yeah, because it would be like a gift, so it would have an extra layer of remarkability to me.
Gotcha.
So yeah, I don't know. That was always something where to me, like your clothes were such an extension of your personality, which is like ridiculous because most of the time mom and dad bought them for us.
Yeah.
Like, so it wasn't like I had gone out and picked out my own outfits necessarily until I had my own job. But to like wear your clothes, like if someone were to have like complimented me on that Ralph Lauren polo that you got for Christmas, it would be like a completely hollow compliment in the way that I would receive it.
Right.
Because you'd be like, well, no, this is Jay's.
Right.
Like, this is not an extension of me.
Right.
This is an extension of Jay.
And it's like, I'm like advertising. You're welcome.
Right. Yeah. It's like, wow, Jay has great taste in clothes, apparently.
Yeah.
Can't believe, you know, the only
time. I don't think that was true in high school.
Can't believe the only time I ever got complimented was when I was wearing Jay's shirt.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all are likely aware of the fact that we have our very own Shopify store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile. And it's hard to imagine not having it now, but arriving at the decision to open our own web store was a big one. In fact, we started our journey on the interweb back in 2012 and didn't finally open up shop until 2018. And a huge part of that is just not knowing where to start, but that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, which is a fancy way of saying it's a really easy and effective way to start an online business, no matter if you're operating out of your garage or have like a whole building or three or something. Once we were set up, our biggest concern was trying a new product, only to discover no one was interested in it. But Shopify is powered with so many reports, more than you can even imagine. And this is so handy because it allows us to use data to better provide what folks are actually interested in. It's so easy to use, but even if you do find yourself caught in a jam, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/poppop.
Popcorn culture is supported by Arena Club.
Okay, so you guys know that I love trading card games and that me and Ben are big time collectors of Pokemon cards. You know, it's that childhood fantasy of finally being able to use adult money to buy those highly coveted rares of our youth. And like, even in our office, we have not one, but two full display cases with some of our all time favorite rarest cards that we've pulled. But something I did not know existed when I was a kid in my youth was the grading process for trading cards or sports cards or whatever you're collecting. You know, to me, it was just like a rare Charizard is a rare Charizard. Like, it doesn't matter if it's been hanging out in my pocket with my lucky paperclip. Turns out it does matter, and kind of a lot, because if you get your cards professionally graded, it can add huge value. And then not only that, but once they're graded, they will like seal them in that pristine condition inside of a plastic case, or what's known in the industry as a slab. And that's where Arena Club steps in, because it's like buying a booster pack, but it's for a pre-graded card. Now, I know that can take like maybe a second to wrap your head around, because you're opening physical cards on a digital platform, which means you open the pack online and see your pulls where they can be added to your showroom for the world to see, but you can also request them to be sent to you at any time. So they have got a ton of pre-graded cards, and then you will get to randomly open one, and then they'll keep it for you, or they can send it to you, or you can just like sell it or trade it online or whatever you want to do. But whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. And right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that is a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's like $40 right there. Anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think it's interesting because I didn't really think of clothes as anything more than just what you were wearing that day for like way longer. Like, it took me forever to really be like, man, I can dress as more of like an extension of who I am rather than like, I'm just putting on jeans and a t-shirt. Like, it's all just,
oh,
you know what I mean?
Same. Yeah. Like, there are all these really funny memes, and maybe it's just the case that the ones that I've seen tend to be women, but it'll be like, me at 13, and it's like a girl wearing like an oversized shirt and like baggy jeans and like, you know, tennis shoes,
yeah,
versus like, you know, my younger sister at 13 who's wearing like a carefully put together outfit of like overalls that are somehow back in season with like, you know, a particular pair of shoes, mm-hmm, and standing in a really cool way and,
yeah,
like not wearing a backpack.
What do you mean?
Like, so I always relate to this because like I'll go back to like ninth grade me, and at that point in time, I don't even think that's like what I thought was cool. It just happened to be what I would wear all the time, were like t-shirts that we got from 5Ks that we did.
Right.
So like almost every single day of the week, I would be wearing a shirt that was like AEP Festival Run.
Right.
June 7th. You know, and yeah, it was this like really dumb picture that had been poorly screen printed onto a Hanes white t-shirt.
Oh, right.
And on the back was a gigantic red AEP logo, which is American Electric Power.
Right.
You know, which is our power provider.
Yeah, it's like, I just put on this, I have this shirt. I put it on today because I ran in this race.
It was the top shirt in my drawer.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, so I think that was for the longest time the way that I was approaching fashion. But then once I broke into it, it was like, I felt like it was a game changer.
I also remember sort of at one point realizing like, man, maybe I could just wear cooler shirts. So I could like intentionally try and like look better.
Right.
And like, it was, yes, like almost like clockwork. People would be like, I like that shirt, Jonathan. I'd be like, thank you.
Yeah, I know. It's like it is like such a desirable thing to have, like somebody like having complimented your outfit. Yeah. It's like, ooh.
Yeah. So let me just advise all the young people out there, like, hey, it's okay to care about your appearance some. It's okay to pick out some clothes to style your hair. Do whatever you want to do.
I feel like the pro tip, I don't know if it was you that taught me this, it might have been, was to go into a store, look for a mannequin that has taken like several articles of clothing that are usually located directly beneath the mannequin, and just buy that outfit.
There you go. Like, maybe, I don't know if I did teach you that. Maybe.
The people at Banana Republic know that like button-down blue shirt goes with this screen-printed t-shirt of an elephant.
Yes. I think I must have told you this because I do remember Banana Republic is what's calling it back to me. It's like, there was, yeah. The things on the mannequin are on there because those are good-looking styles. Right. Like, they're putting those clothes on there because that's what they want you to be like, I want to look like that. And you know what? You can, because it's on the mannequin. And they're selling those things in the store.
Copy it exactly.
Copy it exactly. And you know what? If anyone calls you out, you'll be like, isn't that what the mannequin's wearing? You'd be like, you know what? No one's going to say that. No one has ever. This might be your fear. This might be the thing. You're like, people are like, if I just wear exactly that, people are going to know. Like, no, they will not. And if they do, like, man, if they got too much time. Like, your retort is, you remember what the mannequin's wearing?
Exactly. Yeah. They have officially become more odd than your decision to buy what the mannequin was wearing by remembering what the mannequin was wearing.
Right. There you go. If you don't know how to look cool, look at the mannequins.
Look at the mannequins.
Because the people who work at the store, they're not even choosing what goes on the mannequin, I doubt. I'd bet they are told by a very specific product style guide what to put on the mannequin.
from corporate.
From corporate. Yeah. Let me tell you, corporate knows what's cool. That was a terrible end to this sentiment.
It really is. Like ran clean off a cliff, didn't it?
Clean off a cliff. Yeah, sorry. That doesn't make it sound cool, but let me tell you, just copy the mannequin.
That mannequin is
way better dressed than you.
Do you have, I've talked about this in a vlog before, like in early Super Carlin Brothers, but when I first got my job, I started buying clothes from PacSun. And it was one of these things where I think that
a specific sunwear to you uneducated.
Oh yeah. Is that what it's Pacific Sunwear? Is that what it is now called?
That's what it was always called, Ben.
It's not just PacSun. Whoa! Yeah. Mind blown. Okay, didn't know that. But so I started shopping at Pacific Sunwear.
Yeah.
And I remember I like almost went in and it was one of these things where I had to like work myself up to the decision. I was like, I'm gonna try on a shirt, you know? Like I'm gonna grab this Billabong shirt and I'm gonna try it on.
Put it right on.
And it was brown. And
oh yeah, your brown t-shirts.
My brown t-shirts. It was this thing where I got really into, well, not even really into, it was sort of like the first time I ever tried to wear anything on purpose. And what I discovered is that the brown shirt like looked pretty good. And people were like, hey, Ben, I really like that shirt. And it was like, amazing, I'll get more. And so I start going to Pacific Sunwear every time I get my paycheck, and I'm always going, and they have them like even color coordinated, so you can like flip through the shirts by color, and I consistently keep coming back to the brown. So like over the course of my first year of getting into high fashion, I end up collecting like 6 brown t-shirts from the likes of Billabong and Quicksilver and Hurley.
High fashion. It's mostly t-shirts.
Second of all, what is that, cotton?
It is so brown.
The most brown, the sweet color brown. But it was like one of these things where, you know, I reached my hand into like an unknown space and I moved it around a little bit, and all I was able to uncover was the color brown.
Wow.
And
most of the time that's a pretty bad thing.
Most of the time
you stick your hand in somewhere, it just comes out brown.
Where did you stick your head?
Okay. Meanwhile, Ben's like, every week.
I know. So, oh my gosh, I feel like this is like sort of just like plagued me throughout the years, though. Is that like whenever? So I remember the same thing. For the longest time, I really, really, really disliked V-necks because where I went to college, it seemed like all of, you know, the frat guys wore V-necks. And so in my mind, I was like, oh, well, if I wear a V-neck, then I am like a frat guy and I can't have that. I can't stand for that.
Right.
And then eventually, I think there was one day where I was at the Teej, aka TJ Maxx.
Right.
Thomas Jefferson Maxx.
Well, that's a whole inside joke no one's going to get.
There you go. That's what we call it here at the office, is Thomas Jefferson Max. And I remember I tried on one V-neck and it had a pocket.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, this looks good.
Doesn't look that bad.
And so once again, so I didn't get stuck in the category of brown this time, but for probably a period, and this is not that long ago. This is maybe like 3 to 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I was wrong about V-necks. And so all of a sudden, I was like, well, I'm going to order a ton of them.
Yeah.
So I had a V-neck in every single color.
Right.
And that was just sort of like what I wore all of a sudden.
That was just your look.
Yeah, it was just
yeah.
various colored V-necks.
There you go.
So it just keeps happening. I wonder what's happening to me right now.
What is happening to you right now?
I don't know.
I don't know. You've got some pretty, probably your like snazzy shoes.
My snazzy shoes.
You've got some, you've got some, looks like collectible Mickey Mouse shoes on right now.
I do. I have like a pair of Vans that have like Mickey Mouses all over them. And this is like the funny thing about this, though, is that it's like I get excited when I find a pair of shoes that has become scarce.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, oh, now I don't want to find those. But it's like I'm not so into shoes that I was aware that they were released when they were released.
Right.
So it's like I could have just bought them from Vans when they released them.
Yeah.
But instead, I discovered them way later, was like, wow, gots to have those. Pay a premium price off of someone on Poshmark to get them eventually. But then it feels that much more exclusive because they're no longer available for sale. And I happened to find that one guy who was willing to part with their pair.
Right, for whatever reason.
And now I have them.
That loser.
And I love them.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That's the obvious way to own clothing.
Okay, so all this being said, I feel like as time has gone on and you are able to like afford even clothing, I think like having a real job and, you know, maybe for the first time in your life being able to like put together a quote unquote wardrobe of V-necks.
Yeah.
For you, having become a parent.
Yeah.
Has there been anything in the category of like, I used to be able to spend time thinking about or tracking down new clothes or doing this activity or working on or whatever, where it's like, yeah, I don't have time for that anymore. Like that, like has your wardrobe, is it like represented of everything you owned like before Luke was born?
Oh, like I don't, yeah, like in terms of purchasing new clothes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so not a ton because my solution to this was just I have like a subscription to Stitch Fix.
Okay.
So they send me some new articles of clothing every month and sometimes I'll send the whole thing back, but every now and then I'll just be like, oh yeah, this one looks good. Great. I would say my almost maybe what's happening a little more right now is that because of the quarantine, I feel like I've just really, I'm like in t-shirts pretty much every day. Like there's rarely an occasion to wear something like a button down.
Like a button down.
You know, like that I might have worn to the office. And I don't mean like some sort of like business wear button down. Just like, you know, any, like what I'm wearing right now, you can't see it.
Like a flannel shirt.
Just like a flannel shirt, like a casual, yeah, something. So there's not been much outside of the t-shirt realm, t-shirt and jeans world. I think my, I would say the thing that I haven't been able to spend nearly as much time on anymore, not that I had a ton of time for it to begin with, but is like, I think we talked about this maybe in the last one, maybe it was an after the final pop, but like video games, very scarce time for such a thing.
So it's just like, you might find that there's a period of time in your life, because I've wondered about this before, like whether or not like our dad, if like video games had been much more prominent during the period of time leading up to him having kids, like was him having kids the thing that sort of like broke him away from video games? Like, like is there going to be like an era where you could like look back on it and was like, you know, I used to be really into like Nintendo and Smash and Mario Kart and all these things until, you know, then like Luke was born and then it seemed like I didn't do anything for...
Yeah, I'm very curious to see, like, because growing up, we were always better than our parents at video games.
Right.
But I largely suspect, well, I have no idea, that I think I would be much more competitive with my child who plays a video game just having played video games for, you know, 25 years.
Yeah, like, but
not, yeah.
I have a feeling if they're your offspring,
yeah,
they're going to be good.
They might be. And if it's, like, certain games in particular, like, if you've played it a lot, you're just better. You know, like, if they're playing Fortnite or some sort of first-person shooter type thing, or I don't know. Certain games for sure are lend themselves to more practice. I mean, every game does. But are they going to beat me at Mario Kart? I don't know. Would I let them win? I don't know. Probably not.
Probably not. It doesn't seem like you.
It doesn't seem like. Seems like, yeah, all right. All right. All right, kids, move over. Let me show you how this racing business is done.
Business.
But see, this is the thing, is that this is where I think I don't know how it'll be handled, because I'll have never been in a situation where the person I'm playing against, I want so badly to be really good at the thing.
Oh, sure.
You know, like, if I'm racing against someone or playing against someone, and, like, I just know some easy technique that the other person just clearly doesn't know, you know, that I can exploit against them, guess what? They're never going to find out from me.
Oh, right, you know? Yeah. You're not going to instruct them on how to beat you.
Them. I'm not going to help them get better. I'm not going to, like, that's not fun for me. But, like, my kids, I'm like, okay, kids, try this. You know, I feel like I'm going to be much more instructive. I feel like I finally have someone to pass the knowledge to.
Right. That's why, know? I think the students will become the masters.
Yeah, probably. Hopefully.
And I think that you will find, and this will be interesting, is what your, and this could be the first time this has ever happened to you in your life, and I love it. What your video game experience would be like, or what your relationship would be if your entire experience with it is on the losing end.
Ooh.
Like, because then it would be like, welcome to my world. It's like I have lost more video games in my life than I think you have won. Like, even when you didn't win, I lost.
How so?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's like, that's my perception. That's my reality.
I gotcha.
Is how it worked out. Like, so it would be so very curious to see if you would still like a game that you were regularly putting effort into being better at. But because your kids are students of you to the point where they get like all that extra learning,
yeah,
and they're like, you know, more nimble minded and mm-hmm. their brains are sponges,
right,
and, you know, video games are like developing with them.
Yeah.
You're going to lose constantly.
It's quite possible.
I'm like so excited about this prospect.
Oh boy. Well, I'll have to keep you up to date.
You will.
As to the success rate of my children against me in games.
All of a sudden it's going to be like, man, you know how you're going to come to me and you're going to be like, you know, Ben, how you always want to just like go out in the backyard and chop wood. And I'm gonna be like, yeah, I do know that. And you're like, you wanna go chop some wood? And I'm gonna be like, yes,
yeah,
I've been waiting for you to ask.
And then you'll find out that I'm better at chopping wood than you.
No.
And you'll be like, what was I thinking?
Why did I invite him to this game?
Don't take from my pile.
Don't take from my pile. Is that
an Ultron? I just watched that last night.
Okay. Oh my gosh, that is so funny. Oh my gosh. Well, this will be a fun new horizon.
It will be. Although maybe I don't mind losing to my kids. Although I'll tell you what, I'm not even sure this is necessarily going to happen either, because we've talked before about playing basketball on this podcast before.
Yeah, hoops.
Yeah.
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 I know the jargon.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we've talked about how I like, or maybe you felt like you never got any better, but I felt like for a while during my like eighth grade, ninth grade span of time, I was playing a whole lot and I felt like I got a lot better.
Right.
At basketball. But I'll tell you who I have never beaten once ever in a one-on-one game of basketball is our father.
No kidding.
Oh my gosh.
What the heck?
He's so good.
Strangely good. Like,
yes.
Strangely
like,
good.
Absolutely. Like, so who knows? Maybe my kids will just shoot past me in all sorts of video game talent, but maybe they'll still be like, maybe they'll beat everyone else, but they're like, guys, I cannot beat my dad.
Maybe that's a really good point, man. And this is like one of those things where, so like we've talked about this before, but growing up, our dad was like the local TV news anchor. So we very rarely would go somewhere without somebody like recognizing him or coming over and like, you know, saying hello or mm-hmm. hey, you interviewed me for that story that one time. But I would say the other thing that growing up, most often if people did not come up to me and talk to me about knowing dad from the news, was I used to play ball with your dad at the YMCA.
Yeah.
Is like the other thing that people have brought up so many times.
So many times.
And he's played like the media versus like the Harlem Globetrotters before, right?
Yeah.
Or
yes.
Some version. Maybe it wasn't the actual Globetrotters, but.
Yeah. Like they do stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I remember there was one day where it was like a trick shot team who goes out there and they do all this stuff, and dad like literally put the moves on the guy, on the court, and the guy starts like getting frustrated, like, because I think the whole thing is supposed to be kind of like, from their perspective, they do these, you know, these event games all the time, and their constant is that like the skill level of the person they're playing against is never higher than a 6 or something, you know, like there's a bar that they come to know where every player is going to be slightly different, have their different little nuances, but nobody's better than a 6,
right?
And so I think like, you know, they step in and like all of a sudden dad was like maybe an 8, and
right.
It's like, this is weird. Like, it's like you're screwing with our ability to do the show because you're a little bit too good to be like on the other end of
this.
You're
supposed to just be like some regular off the couch weather guy who we just like dribble around and get to sort of make fun of, and everyone loves it because you're the local guy.
And, right. And like, yeah, you're like, you're sort of like the butt of the joke, but it's all in good fun. And so the other thing to keep in mind too is that our dad is like 5'8".
Oh yeah. Take that into consideration is that I'm much taller than our father.
Yeah.
And in basketball, inches matter.
Right.
It is not a short man sport.
No. And yet always so good.
Don't know. Yeah. Anyway, so whatever.
So there's your hope that you could continue to be.
We'll see. I'll say this: Luke already pretty good at basketball, though.
Is he? I mean,
we've got a little Tykes hoop. He wants to play every single day.
Okay,
He's putting in the hours. He's shooting. I don't know. He's getting his 10,000 in early. You know.
Right. Okay. So let me ask you about that. I like the idea of talking about 10,000 hours because this seems like a good way to close out this week's episode. Is there anything where you, and it could be video games, where you feel like you have accomplished 10,000 hours? Like, without it being an objective. So for those of you who don't know, according to, I think, Malcolm Gladwell in the book Outliers, he sort of talks about this idea that in order to become a professional at an activity, you need to put in at least 10,000 hours of effort into doing that. And for reference, I believe in an average work year, like 40 hours a week times 52 is like 2,080 hours.
Right.
So it would be approximately like 5 years of a full-time job at something. Like, that is like your measure of how much time you have dedicated to doing this particular activity.
Right.
Which I think is interesting because, like, I think when we used to play Final Fantasy X on our PlayStation, it would keep track of like hours played.
Yeah.
And I feel like we had like 140 hours, which felt like forever.
Well, it's so hard with stuff like that because, and I'm always very cognizant of this when I play games that have a timer, is that I never know if I press the pause button, does the timer stop?
Oh, sure.
You know, like, I pressed pause because I'm not at a save spot. And then I went to bed and came home and, came back downstairs in the morning. It's like, did that add 8 hours to the playtime?
I have a very brief aside on that because we had people sending in their audible listening times for a good long... Well, actually, to this day, I still probably get one or two a day of people sending in how long they've been listening. Some people have like over a year of listening time, which is insane in hours. Like, that's a lot of hours. So my query on that was like, are there people who are falling asleep without using a sleep timer and like it plays through the evening? Because that I was like, some of these, it seems like, okay, you're a super dedicated listener. You like definitely taking a lot of books, but some of these seem so long that like, I don't know how you would fit it into your life.
Right. I mean, yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I'd like to know how people do that. I always have I'm presently using a 15 minute sleep timer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
For my own listening pleasure.
Okay. Good to know. Yeah. Okay. So my question though, in a roundabout way, is there anything that you've collected 10,000 hours on through the course of your life? And it's like, it's not your career. It's not like your, you know, whatever.
Right. It's not YouTubing,
but you have like somehow put in that amount of time to something.
Gosh, I don't know. Driving seems like maybe it's high up there.
Driving would seem like it would be up there. That's kind of a weird thought that like, in a sense, based on this definition, like if you've been driving for 15, 20 years, you're a professional driver.
Right.
Like,
but I could tell you I'm a way better driver than when I was like, 17.
Sure. I agree with that. And it's interesting too, because you do have to go one step further. Like, you're not a professional, like, stock car driver, like a NASCAR driver is.
Right.
Because you are not, they have 10,000 hours on the track.
Right.
You know,
that's a whole different kind of driving.
You are a professional daily driver.
Yes. That's a very good determination.
Right.
Whatever
right.
the word is there. But yes, I would agree.
Yeah.
That is a good thing. And it's like something, it's stuff like that. It happens so passively that you're probably not aware of how much better you are at it than anyone else.
Of course.
Especially with driving, where most people are probably in that zone.
Exactly. Like, the interesting thing is every single day you're surrounded by professionals.
Right. Yes. Except for those teenagers.
With the little thing on top of their car that says student driver.
Student drivers. Steer clear of those guys. Make sure you honk at them real loud.
Scare the bejesus out of them.
Because you know what? All they want is for that exactly to not happen.
Right. I know. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I hated driver's ed growing up. That was
the worst.
It was so
taking it in
miserable.
The summer.
Yeah.
It's like whole week of just the worst kind of school.
Right. Yeah. No good. No good. I remember going through that and being strangely really self-conscious. I would watch the other drivers that were in the car with me during student driving to like observe how good they were at like checking mirrors and, you know, doing all like, you know, the turn signals and when they're doing the turn signals relative to the turn.
Yeah.
And I would get so self-conscious. I'm like, man, this guy's checking his mirrors like clockwork every like 14 seconds. He's like, rear view, side view, rear view, side view. And I'm like, dude, I don't even know if I checked it three times the whole time.
I know, right? Like as if the instructor's like staring at your eyes like, let me, yep.
this kid has a great cadence.
Yeah. He's all over it.
Right on top of it. Yeah. No, the other thing that happened to me during driver's ed was there was this one occasion, and I feel like prior to me going through driver's ed, there was this like known thing that like if you were to put like a little extra time behind the wheel on one given day, they might give you a signature for like 2 days worth.
Oh.
And it was sort of this like, I actually think it was like maybe a smidge of a scandal, and it happened like right before I started driver's ed.
Yeah.
And so there was this one day where we were supposed to go and pick this kid up who was like, went to like a school in like Botetourt or something. So
far away from us.
And so, and we got all the way out there, and then I was supposed to drive there, and then the kid was going to drive back.
Right.
And we like drive all the way like out to this crazy place, and the kid like had to go to practice or something like that. So he didn't show up.
So you weren't driving very fast.
Maybe. Yeah. Very safe. And so I ended up driving for this like 2.5 hours when you're supposed to put in like 45 minutes.
Right.
And so the whole time I'm like, the great news is I'm going to get like 3 signatures for today, and then I don't have to ride around with this guy one more time. And I was so excited the whole time. I'm like, this is the best. I don't have to keep doing this after school. And I got back and I was like, how many is he going to give me? Give me 3, maybe 4. And he gave me 1. And I was like, no. I was like, can't you give me 2? Like, I drove for so long, and like that kid wasn't there, so I did like 2 legs worth. And he was like, no, I'm sorry, I can only give you 1. And I was like, this is the worst.
Wow. You actually asked him about it.
I did, because I couldn't believe it. It was such a thing that people had like talked about having happened to them, and I was like, oh, this is a no-brainer.
Easy. Man.
But no, it didn't work for me.
Sorry about that.
I know, me too. Yeah,
it's
me
just
too.
Like wasted time.
Wasted time. I'll never get back.
Yeah.
I think about it sometimes.
It seems irresponsible for him to have let you drive around that long.
I agree. It was a very long time to be
wasting
behind the
your
wheel.
Time.
And I do remember I was extremely tired.
Mm.
Yeah. So I got home and it was like, I'm just going to go to bed now.
I mean, it's stressful driving that long if you haven't, you're not accustomed to driving at all.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
Okay. So I feel like we're kind of hitting our mark here. So I have a couple of questions for the colonels out there to send in any feedback that might seem like appropriate to today's episode. AOL Instant Messenger.
Yes.
You know, we had a lot of stuff going on with that today. So what were your experiences? Did you have a weird screen name, a favorite away message?
Oh, did you have a way of tracking what your friends were doing when you could tell you were being slighted?
Yeah. Like they haven't gone idle.
Wow.
They're still there.
Still there.
What else did we talk about today? Oh, video games. Are there any parents listening who have kids who are at the point where they can play video games with you, and are they better than you, and how do you handle that? Or are you still crushing them? And it's just like, this is the sweet, sweet part of this game.
That's right. You're not going to get better if you don't play harder opponents, you know?
Oh, man. I'm very interested in this because I think, like, I found myself generally uninterested in video games because I constantly lost. So it'd be very interesting if like our generation is so good at video games that as our kids step in, they all their introduction to it is getting their butts kicked by their parents, and therefore they're not into it.
Mm. It's so interesting because like some people that might turn away, and other people it might like light a fire underneath.
It's true, because that's how I was with Diablo, which we've talked about extensively. Like sort of that, like I watched you play and it became so important to me to be good at it that I put in an enormous amount of time to get to the point where I was good at it, only to discover it didn't really seem like you cared that much.
Well, I definitely cared. I liked Diablo a lot when I was in high school. But I do know there were certain things like growing up that I think because we had to share, time and stuff on whatever consoles we had, that it always felt like I had like only child friends who would just get unlimited playtime on stuff.
Right.
And they would beat me, and that would drive me crazy. So I would like specifically practice a certain thing and try and get really good at it so that when the moment came, I could totally shine.
But those were your peers.
Those were my peers. And sure enough, though, once they couldn't beat me, it seemed like they didn't like it as much.
Yeah. It becomes much less fun if you lose constantly.
Yeah, well, they shouldn't have beaten me in the first place then, right?
I know. I know. It's, what was your, Okay. I don't want to tangent too hard. Your motivation in video games always seems like so pure to me. Mm-hmm. Like it was like you wanted to get good at video games because you liked them.
Well, it was just always like, I don't know. Because we didn't end up playing with other people right. that often. But it was always just like, if we do... But, like, this is an impressive thing. I don't know.
Gotta be ready. Okay.
Gotta be
okay.
ready. Okay. Gotta, I don't know. I just liked being good at it.
Right. Well, so I guess what I mean, is almost that like the level at which you got good, because I think this is the, like we've talked about this, like everybody thinks that they are good at ping pong and Mario Kart. Mm-hmm. And there are like these things where I feel like chances are you just never played anybody good.
Right.
And so it's kind of like the bar might be like, your specific siblinghood, where it's kind of like, oh yeah, like Susie is the best in our family, and it's sort of like, and then as a result, Susie's like, yeah, I'm good at Mario Kart. But then what I have observed is that is the case with us. Like, you were definitely the best at Mario Kart in our family. But then anyone I've seen you play outside of our family who thinks they're really good, you crush them too.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, you ascended to a level that, like, was beyond the competition that was available to you.
Right.
Which is odd.
Well, so much of it was that, I think, Mario Kart specific, was that so often, I never felt like I had unlimited time to enjoy anything as a child. It always felt like the thing I wanted to do was being, like, barred. By like time restrictions by our parents or shared time with the brothers. Like, I was never able to just really enjoy the thing, or like social pressure would like dictate this isn't a cool thing anymore.
Oh, sure.
You know, but then I think when I got to college, I had brought the old N64 because it was, you know, as ever, you know, you can't bring the current console to college.
Your
siblings are still using it.
Oh, that's true.
Right?
That's true, yeah.
That's what happens to everyone. You can't bring the current one because the people at home are still using it. But guess what? No one's using the N64.
Right.
And I was just like, oh, I can just play this nonstop. I can just play it. And so I remember in particular, I restarted Diddy Kong Racing.
Diddy Kong Racing.
Yeah, which I think might be the real secret, because in order to like unlock the final character in Diddy Kong Racing or whatever, you have to beat the time trials on like every single level.
Right.
And in order to do this, you have to like learn how to like power slide and do certain things, which as a kid, I was like not willing to do. I was like, I'm just going to steer around the course until I win. Yeah.
Right.
But I wasn't like trying to go faster or anything. And then when I started doing like Mario Kart stuff again, it was like, oh, you know what? There's a lot of like power sliding and boosting and drifting and stuff that you can do. And I don't know. And it came out on the Wii, and I loved the Wii, and I again just had unlimited time as a sophomore. This is the other thing, is that my girlfriend was long distance, so it wasn't like you know, and I was at Virginia Tech then, so I transferred schools, and so I didn't have like a big pool of friends from my freshman year,
right,
or anything that were there, and I was living off campus, and my girlfriend was 2 hours away, so at night it was like, and my roommate was like rushing a frat, so it was like, well, there's not really anyone ever here, and I don't really have people to go hang out with like every single night of the week or anything,
right,
and this is what I want to be doing.
This is so funny, because like I feel like almost what you're describing is exactly the question I was asking about the 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
But it's like maybe we have to like reappropriate it to more of like a hobby based expertise level, mm-hmm. of like the 5,000 hours.
Yeah.
But I feel like everything you just described is like the strange circumstances that slowly funneled you into the world where you dedicated more time than average to becoming good at kart based racing video games.
Uh-huh.
Like, and as a result, you accrued, it's kind of like the Beatles playing these nightclubs for years and years and years. It's like they weren't going out and performing like sold out stadiums,
right,
for 10,000 hours. Mm-hmm. They got their 10,000 hours by performing to nightclubs,
right,
you know, to whoever was there for 8 hours at a time,
right.
So it's really interesting that you had these circumstances that probably allowed for like a peak in that,
yeah,
in that time period.
I suppose so.
Huh. I like it. This is very interesting. Huh. Okay, guys. So be sure, if you have any feedback at all about the pod, be sure to email it over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Or we have a Facebook page. We have a Twitter handle. There's lots of places you can find us online. So really anywhere on there, shoot it over. We'd be excited to see what you guys have to say. And we'll hopefully potentially bring it up as the conversations allow for it. The other thing is, if you would like to support us over on Patreon, that is how we determine who is the host each week. So far it's been me, so that's good, knock on wood.
For now
we have three different tiers. There is host Buzzy B, host Jazzy J, and host Neither, where we have the intro music play and then just 15 seconds of silence for you to do whatever you choose.
I hope that never happens. We never have no host.
Yeah, it's just like I feel like it would feel like an editing error. Like if there was a retention rate for that episode, it would just drop off because people are like, oh, they forgot to like put words.
Whoops. Hey-o.
Forgot to add words to this version. That's available over at patreon.com/popcornculture. All three tiers tiers have the exact same rewards, one of which is after the final pop, which is an additional 10 minutes of listening leisure?
Listening for your listening pleasure.
For that.
Yes.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Words and such. So that comes out every week as well on Friday with the pop. Otherwise, guys, until next time.
Pop, pop.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.